Hey, everybody out there in Radio Land, if you're listening or not listening, maybe you're getting telepathic messages today. I am Bridget Lynn Dolgoff, the host of the Urban Farm Project. And today's guest appears to be running a little late, so we're going to go ahead and get started. She is Amy Hetgar, and she is from Homegrown, New Mexico. And so I was looking over their website. If you're in Mexico, New Mexico, not Mexico, you might want to take a look at their website. They're doing a lot of amazing urban farming ideas, as well as looks like they're doing a lot of community work and networking with a lot of the farms and eco people around in the area. And, okay. So anyway, we have Amy online and she's going to come online and we'll introduce her and then we could talk to her from there. Amy, are you there?
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good. Nice sunny day here in New Mexico.
Great. Well, I was looking at your guys' website, and I was looking at a lot of the amazing things you guys are doing. I had no idea, like, how much networking you were doing down there with the Homegrown New Mexico.
Yes, absolutely. We can't get it done alone. So there's a lot of different people that work together and help us communicate and be part of a network, really, down here to get gardening and anything at your home done.
Yeah, that is amazing. So what I usually do is when I have my guests is have them kind of like talk briefly about their life and how they ended up where they're at. And you're particularly interesting because you kind of moved from a corporate world to the farm world, which
Yes, definitely.
So go ahead and tell our listeners about yourself. And your bio is on our webpage so they can look at that as well. And your contact information is there too. But go ahead and give us a brief chat about how you got where you're at now.
Okay. Well, definitely food has always been important to me in my whole life. And I guess I grew up with my great-grandmother, Sarah, and she always was gardening and asking the kids to go take the breakfast outside. So we had to take coffee grounds and eggshells and any of the fruit and vegetable scraps, and we thought, man, Grandma's kind of a little crazy putting trash in the yard, but she was composting back then. And so as I got older, I learned what she was doing and the amazing things that she had learned. And then my family also gardens, and so that was just kind of what we did in the summer. That's how we got our fruits and vegetables. And so certainly in school, I didn't ever study sustainability or gardening. I didn't those weren't really options for me to study. And so I did more of journalism and marketing and did that for a corporation for a while, for almost 12 years, and then decided that that wasn't really helping people in the way that I wanted to help people. So went into doing more local food, working for a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture here, because I was part of that CSA, and I found they didn't have a website and good marketing, so I helped them with that aspect of it, and then just really met a lot of people in the area and figured out how we could work more together as really Santa Fe and New Mexico, and started Homegrown New Mexico about almost 2 years ago is when we first started having meetings and getting together and deciding this was a good organization to put together and then to get out there to the people, really. And that's how it's done well, is through potlucks that we have and ways that we can connect people and connect their needs. So if we find out somebody's interested in bees, we have a lot of people that we know that have come to our potlucks that are interested, so we can connect them.
I think it's really awesome because, you know, I've been traveling a lot for about 10 years off and on, working on different nonprofit projects, always working on like ecology or volunteer gardening and a lot of different things. And I think the biggest issue is that most of the people doing it don't know how to market, don't really know how to do business. And so it's really nice, you know, to look at the website and what an amazing work of art you've done. and how you're connecting all the local people and they're all working together. So you're assisting like many people to get out there that are around you. So I think it's super great. Super great. So is there anything big coming down the pipeline that you guys are doing in the next couple of years? Do you guys have any big plans or goals or...
Well, I guess the largest event that we have every year is a fundraising event that's actually happening next weekend. And that is a garden tour of, it's usually of 6 home gardens, but this year we picked one more. So it's 7 home gardens that are more edible gardens. And some of the people might be beekeepers. Some of the people also have chickens and turkeys and other things that they're raising at their homes. And then certainly they have some type of an edible garden, whether it's edible like herbs and vegetables or whether it's edible to the environment and the animals in the area as well are some of the other things that people will be able to see on the tour. And that's called the Kitchen Garden and Coop Tour, and we're doing that with Edible Santa Fe.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you have any long-term, like... long-term goals, like to get a large farm or just to continue doing what you're doing? Is there going to be any kind of expansion?
Yes, we definitely want to expand into more cities in New Mexico. That's why we call it Homegrown New Mexico instead of Homegrown Santa Fe. And so right now we've got different contacts within the different cities and trying to figure out how we can do the same type of events that we do potlucks each month, and in Santa Fe we have 2 every month where we have speakers and small education classes, like a 30-minute education on how to build a compost pile is what's going to be happening in August for us. And we'll have one at the end of this month that's on seed saving, but it's only 30 minutes, and it's really just an introduction for the person that's giving the class to give out their contact information, and then maybe they have another class in the future, or they are a good contact in the area to work with for, say, composting is a good example. We have a master gardener that's coming to teach us composting, and she's also a master composter. And so she'll teach us in 30 minutes the basics of setting up the compost pile, what you need at your house, what works well here in New Mexico, because we have a really dry climate. So things are a little bit different, I think, in this particular climate. And then she's a contact later if people have additional questions. So that's kind of the connection, and we want to do that in more cities in New Mexico.
Great. That's awesome. I know Nevada's the same way. It's kind of a hostile environment. You have to. I always tell people you kind of have to do a Jesus Christ. You have to turn sand into soil.
Exactly, exactly. We have sand and clay, and we don't have soil in our state, so...
Yeah, no, we're in the same boat here.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely a lot of soil building and really just finding material to put into the soil. And so we've got some really great gardens that are happening here right now, and we're hoping that we can see additional ones and then just really build the same kind of connection we did here in Santa Fe in other cities.
Yeah, no, I love New Mexico. I travel through there quite a bit, and then I lived in Taos for like about 5 months. And everything going on in New Mexico is just really ahead of the curve. It's like people just kind of have a natural tendency there to, you know, become more sustainable. And because you move there and then everybody's kind of moving along this line, and it just kind of encourages you. It brings New Mexico really brought out the best in me. As far as a person, and it just was an amazing place to live, you know. So have you lived in New Mexico for a long time, or are you a transplant, or?
I have been here off and on for 20 years, I would say, but I'm originally from Colorado, and that's where I started gardening, and that's, I think, where I started understanding it's dry, there's not a lot of soil. the season's really short for gardening because it snows here up until sometimes June.
You're the same as Reno. Like you guys are at like 7,000 feet elevation, and we're almost at 5,000. So,
yes, exactly. So elevation as well is, you know, we have a ski area here in town also. So
yeah, I know. It's like, I think like some of the lowest parts of New Mexico are like 7,000 feet because they're go from there to, you know, 10,000, 11. In some cases, some people are growing wheat, like, you know, like 10,000, 11,000 feet. Winter wheat.
Oh, yes. Definitely, we have a lot of different elevations that I think impacts, also cooking it impacts, because we do a lot of cooking classes. It'll be throughout, really until the middle of December, we're going to be doing cooking classes, and I think that impacts it as well for baking and cooking things like rice is harder here because of that elevation. So definitely, I think it impacts a lot of different things, and there's a lot of people that just move here that have heard about New Mexico, want to come through, move to Taos, move to Santa Fe, move to Albuquerque. And it is definitely a little different in just kind of the ways that you live. But I think it also, like you said, is very connected. You know,
yeah,
people don't do things on their own here.
It was the first place that I had ever been in, you know, across the United States where plumbing was an option.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely on our tour next week, we have compostable toilets that you'll be able to see.
So, yeah.
And that's not something that is currently everywhere. It should be everywhere, but I think people are maybe a little more ahead in just thinking about these things here, even though we don't have it everywhere. At least people are starting to think about it and get together and try to figure out how we can make certain things happen.
Yeah, and I was really surprised. I mean, yeah, definitely the toilet composting is an awesome thing. But there, like in Taos, quite a few places that I was living at had outhouses already because they didn't have plumbing, you know, like indoor plumbing. And so a lot of people have just continued to kind of live that way, kind of like a more natural lifestyle and not have really used the outhouses for composting material. But it's definitely interesting to go outside when it's really cold and sit on a toilet, you know, in the morning. Actually,
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
It's not warm in Taos all the time.
Huh?
It's not warm in Taos all the time.
No, it's not. Yeah. I mean, spring is still winter. You could still get like up there an angel fire, like, you know, 4 feet of snow in a night in the spring. So yeah, no, it's New Mexico is an amazing place because I think that all the different altitudes and just everything and the people, just the interests of most of the people in New Mexico. It's like going to your own country. It's like another planet, and it's totally like that. But it's like I said, it brings out the best in you. It can either bring out the really bad in you and you leave, or it can bring out the really good in you once you make the transition. There's definitely a whole vibe there.
Yeah, definitely. And in here, we're seeing a lot more people starting to ask about what composting is and starting to ask why we're putting things into the landfill. And so that's something that we're working on as well with Homegrown New Mexico. And I just got back from a community garden where we collect people's fruit and vegetable scraps on the weekends. And so we don't have a huge following of people that come, but we have had the same people come and drop them off throughout the summer, and then basically we're using those scraps to make as our green material for compost in the community garden.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's super great. Because sometimes, you know, I'm sure, like, to do all the community gardens that you guys do, you have to have a pretty large amount of compost to make that happen, and a few people can't really make enough compost, you know, make scraps to do, like, large areas of compost for community garden.
Yes, that's what we ran into when we just opened. This is the new EarthCare Community Garden, and EarthCare works a lot with youth, and they help them to really have a voice in the community, and then gardening is part of what they do. And we looked at the soil and looked at the non-soil in our community garden and decided we needed a lot more organic material. So, and it's a neighborhood where there's about 5,000 people that live, and all the lots are really small. So, it's not really condos, but definitely very small yards. So they don't really have space to do their own compost. And so a lot of people are interested in giving us their scraps, but not actually making it themselves. So we're happy about that because we have a lot of brown material that we've saved that we can add to their green material and then turn that into compost.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I just, you know, keep looking at your website, and you guys just have so much stuff on here. I mean, you also have like 10 different blogs from other people, from ecology to farms and ranches. One of the things I noticed, it says under strategies to partner with, or wait, to receive support from city, county, and state government agencies. What kind of support have you received? And are you guys creating like a dialogue with the city and county, and maybe how are they responding to that?
Well, so far we are in a dialogue with them. I'm actually meeting with the Food Policy Council this week of Santa Fe and going to talk about community gardens and just kind of neighborhood gardens with them to give them an update. We talk to them about every year. To give them updates. We also work with the Parks Department to actually most of the community gardens here in Santa Fe are through city parks and have been done through the city. So there's really only about two or three more what I would call private spaces that have community gardens. Most of them are through the city. And so we work with that department to either help write grants for more community gardens, which we didn't get any money this year, but we'll try again next year for more funding for community gardens. And then they're also sending us to teach people about gardening. So we've been teaching a lot of summer camps here about the current community gardens and what kinds of things people can plant for fall gardening. So that's been something that I've been doing probably two or three times a week this summer with the different camps. And then also, we're going to be doing a presentation at the end of the summer that's more on water catchment and biking more in Santa Fe. And we built a truck farm, basically, which is in the back of a pickup truck. Ours is a trailer, but it's a 1950s pickup truck. And we, the city wanted to do this presentation and show a truck farm, and and asked us to be the sponsor of it. And so we have that built, and that's on our Facebook site. You can see all of those pictures at Homegrown New Mexico if you just look that up. And so we have that in place, and we'll be displaying that all over town. Right now it's at Whole Foods, and then it will be moving to see the movie Truck Farm on Monday, and then we'll be moving to the other events and maybe other community gardens throughout the rest of the season.
That's really great. And so is the city helping to sponsor that, the truck farm?
Well, they are sponsoring an event to really take one area of the city and show how we can do better solar, water catchment, biking, and then also to show how we could grow more food. And so we're actually the sponsor of the growing the more food aspect, and we're going to be showing our truck farm.
Oh, okay.
So... and we have a lot of things growing in it. It's an interesting, we were able to find a 1950s Ford pickup that's on a trailer so we could actually take that around to different places. And we've got green chili, of course, growing in it from New Mexico, and squash and runner beans, and then a couple of tomato plants.
Yeah, I bet you it looks just fun.
Yeah, it's definitely been popular, and we're really happy. We have the movie Truck Farm on Monday, and so we'll be inviting people to come. And we'll just be also after that talking about how people can start to garden and start their fall garden, which is about the time that we are in the elevation and the weather to start our fall gardens to go through probably mid-October is when it starts to snow here.
Yeah. So I also noticed that on the website, you also have a seed exchange area. And looks like the seed exchange has already happened in March. And do you guys offer the seed exchange, or do you have different farms that come in and offer seeds for that?
Well, what we did this year is we decided that a lot of the gardeners had their own seeds here in town. there used to be additional seed exchanges that farms put on and that other places put on, and we hadn't seen those published recently. And so we got together with the city, actually, and co-sponsored an event for the seed exchange back in March and had quite a few hundred people come. I think we didn't actually have tickets or anything. We just counted the people as they were in, but we think we had about 250 people come to the seed exchange. And a lot of people brought their own seeds that they saved from their own gardens. So that was really amazing, actually. They didn't just bring a package of seeds. A lot of them were, you know, in little plastic bags or little wax paper, and they wrote on it, you know, the seed and the year that they saved it and what it was. And some people actually came. We had two people come and say they wanted their own table for the seed exchange because they brought so many different seeds that they wanted to provide to people. And it is important, I think, with the elevation here and the, I guess, probably more challenging gardening situation to have seeds that are grown here, because if you save those seeds, they're going to have a better chance of growing than seeds that might come from Oregon or the East Coast.
Yeah, no, I took a I did a year of biodynamic classes at the Rudolf Steiner in Sacramento for farming. And one of the things I learned was that it takes like three seasons or three times out of seed to get it to be kind of more of a medicine and also more of that area, you know, where it has a lot better chance of adapting really well. It'll change its form and sometimes adapt really well.
Yes, so definitely we had a lot of those types of seeds. Maybe they had some peas that did better in the cooler climates. We had a lot of green seeds that people had saved that had done well for several seasons. And so it was interesting to hear the different gardeners talk about their seeds and where they had grown them and the stories behind them also, I think, were some of the most interesting things that day.
Yeah, it's like your children. You're like, ooh, I'm passing children on.
Exactly, because a lot of people had saved, you know, basically they had grown a lot of things last year to save seeds. And so that was pretty amazing as well. And we'll be doing some more seed saving classes. We have one at the end of this month during our potluck where we'll talk about how we can save them so that those people can maybe save some of the seeds for next year. We'll be doing probably a similar seed exchange. We did one in February that we had about 65 people come to, and then the one in March was larger.
I'm just really excited. You know, I was really excited to talk to you about all the things that you guys have going on, and just to look at your website is just pretty amazing. So I was looking at your class stuff, and it looks like the last class was May 20th on the website. It doesn't look like there's anything coming up. Do you guys have anything coming up that you would like to tell people about?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And actually, we do have on our community calendar, we have some more things. So during the month of July, we have our tour. And so that's kind of on our front page of our website. But then once we start moving into the month of August, we'll be doing food preservation. So on August 22nd, which is a Wednesday, we are doing a kind of a canning and food preservation class that will also show pickling and how to make jam. And that's going to be at 5:45 p.m. on the 22nd. And that will be taught by Dina Aquilina, who works with Beneficial Farms CSA here and has done a lot of recipes for the CSA group. And they're also posted on the Beneficial Farms CSA website.
That's excellent, excellent. That's excellent stuff.
Yeah, and so then we'll also be doing another class on September 9th. We'll be doing a class on how to actually make your own salsa and then can that, and that's going to be at one of our community gardens outside. So that will be posted as well. And then we're also doing a lot of composting classes this fall. We'll be doing one at our potluck, and then we have a composting company out of Albuquerque coming up here to teach on October, I think it's Sunday, October 3rd. They'll be coming up to teach in the afternoon from 2 to about 3:30 on how to do composting in a tall pile. So they have a little bit different method than what we currently use at the community garden, and we feel like people might want to compost more quickly in a larger pile.
Good, good. So I'm sorry I keep bouncing you around all over the place. You're probably like,
oh,
wow, this is the craziest interview. But one of the things that I really, really loved about the website, and I'm getting back to that, is how you guys are volunteering. And whenever I talk to people or do a presentation somewhere, I always talk to people about the alternative methods that we can use as money resources that I think are better and more accessible for people who farm, you know, because then it becomes like a win-win situation, kind of creating your own money system. And one of the things I noticed on your guys' volunteer on the website is that you guys are doing this for the volunteers, which this might be the first that I've seen for volunteering. And it's the Time Bank volunteering on behalf of Homegrown New Mexico. So do you want to explain what you guys are doing with the Time Bank?
Oh, absolutely. So the Time Bank is a way to exchange services or hours, basically. So and all the hours are the same, whether you are a doctor of oriental medicine or you're driving somebody to the airport and you spent an hour doing it, they're equally exchanged. So when we actually joined the Time Bank back in 2010 when we started as and be the actual organization, because I thought if I join it as myself, I'm going to be doing $10 for myself and then using the time that I got, you know, to go get a haircut or something that I need for myself, which a lot of people use and do it very well without using cash dollars. And so we joined, and any of the hours that we spend doing other things, like I'll help people online learn how to use Facebook or a blog or do graphics for their organization, and then I'll get time dollars for that. And then we use those time dollars to give to the people that volunteer for us. So we have volunteers that help us post flyers to talk about our events, and they may spend, you know, 3 hours posting flyers, and then they get free time dollars and can use that for whatever services they need. If they need to go get acupuncture or a massage, or they need some bookkeeping, you know, we've got all those different services on the Time Bank. And so that's worked out really well. We're going to be giving time dollars for people that come to our tour next week. And so we have shifts of 4 hours. So if you come and work in the morning, then you get 4 hours of time dollars, and they just go and exchange it with Homegrown New Mexico on the Time Bank website.
No, I think
the Time Bank is everywhere too. There's Time Banks in almost in many different continents, as well as many different cities in the U.S.
Yeah, I think there are 78 cities right now have a form of Time Bank, where you give a certain amount of time and you get that time back in whatever way you need, like mechanics, like you were saying, or you need some acupuncture or whatever that your needs are. Yeah, in Nevada, we don't really have this yet. We still have kind of barter, which doesn't really work, you know, because it's still kind of attached to the money system. And
yeah.
Not everything you – they don't really have everything you want or need. And it's a little bit more complicated because they want you to pay to get into it. So I just really like – I like the fact that you guys are involved with time banking. And I really love that you give your – I mean, just amazing. Like, you give your volunteers time bank hours. I just love that. One of the things I was thinking about, you know, when we're on farms and stuff, this is just kind of a thought that I've been working on, trying to figure out how to make it happen between farmers and what they need and what interns may need on farms, because they don't get paid. And that's to be able to work something out to where interns on farms or apprentices or whatever you want to call them would be have some kind of access to either time banking or some kind of, you know, time banking type system that the farmers could give to them.
Yeah, and that's definitely what the Time Bank, we were one of the first organizations to join, but they've also included, we have a community farm that grows their food to donate. And they're also part of the Time Bank system, so that if people go and volunteer there, they get time dollars.
Yeah, no, I think it's such a great idea because it's fair.
Yeah, and it definitely, it is something that I think we're using a national website that's just modified for this area. So I think it can really happen in almost any community where people do want to volunteer and exchange their hours.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good, and I think it's fair, because I interned on several farms, and sometimes it's just really not fair.
Yes, definitely. I understand what you mean, and just, you know, tracking all those different hours that you go out and work. And a lot of times I got paid in food, so I definitely understand that kind of aspect of, you know, needing to make money, but also, you know, doing what you want as well.
Yeah, sometimes you need a little haircut, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, no, that definitely makes sense. But yeah, definitely it's been a good system. And we also try to trade hours with other people. We're working with the Master Gardeners, and we were able to get a project put in place so that the Master Gardeners that help us on the tour next week get hours towards becoming a Master Gardener for 2013.
Wow, I mean, every time I look at your website, I'm just really, really impressed with how your website is set up. And I mean, just really, really, really good. And I'm just really amazed at how Homegrown New Mexico is really open, and they're embracing everything and everyone around them, which I just really love that as well. You guys could actually take your model probably and travel coast to coast teaching people.
Yeah, if I had the time, I think that is something that we wanted to start. And we actually were going to call it like Homegrown Southwest or Homegrown, you know, different cities that we could do. But definitely I think that's a long-term plan once we identify the three areas that we work with, the potlucks, the classes, and then our garden tours.
Yeah, I think it's great. Okay, so I'm looking on here, and you guys do carnivore, right? You guys are omnivores. You don't just specialize in vegetarian or vegan.
No. We do a lot of backyard chickens. So I think definitely eggs are a big thing that a lot of people bring to our potlucks because they want to show what their eggs are like. So we have lots of deviled eggs and frittatas and casseroles and baked egg things as well. And we have a great group that actually just joined our board. He's not even on our board of directors yet, but it's Mike and Molly's House, and they're a blog that's actually on the side. And they did our chicken class this year because they have a really amazing process of how they have done chickens in their yard. And the big thing about chickens here is protection, because we have coyotes and raccoons and other things that can get into your chicken coop. So they have some pretty amazing ways that they've been able to protect their chickens. And they don't live in the city in Santa Fe. They live kind of on a mini farm outside the city.
Yeah, it can definitely be nature against your farm.
Yes.
It can be.
Definitely have had that happen. And I've talked to some people in town whose chickens have not made it. Even some people on our tour last year, we had some great people with backyard chicken coops, and they called me later in the year and let me know that their chickens were no longer making it, and they were going to get new ones for this year. So definitely a big aspect, in at least in this part of the country.
Yeah, I think in every part of the country, when your property is outside, which I've heard is called the peri-urban, like there's urban now, and now there's this new term called peri-urban, which are the areas between the urban settings and the country.
Oh, and, interesting.
Are you there?
I haven't heard that before. That's actually interesting.
Yeah, it's actually a phrase that's being coined by the permaculture groups. And I interviewed a permaculture guy, and I asked him, I said, I don't know what peri-urban is. Could you please explain that to me? And it's the in-between areas. Anyway, those are the areas that are the hardest hit because you have, the country wildlife coming in close to the urban settings. And then here you put in a peri-urban area, they're definitely going to come in and get whatever they can. Because, you know, they're hungry too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, so that's definitely been something that we have those areas here, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, that are areas where they've done development that's not in urban development, but more of a community kind of development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll have to look that up because that's definitely what we have in some of our areas here.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Bears and, you know, interesting animals that have come in, and they're really just coming in because they're hungry.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, if you smelt the free dinner, you smell a free chicken dinner, you'd probably, like, go look. Like, oh, I smell a barbecue. Smells good.
Yeah,
where is
absolutely.
It? They're like, hey, free chicken dinner.
Yeah, especially with some of the fires that we've had here. We definitely, with the fires, we've had more animals move. And so we've had more with... In New Mexico, we had a lot of fires last year, and a lot of bears moved into different areas in the mountains. And so just trying to work with that process and say, hey, they're hungry, let's just try to work with them instead of just calling to see if somebody will come and remove them from your land. And definitely a lot of fires in Colorado this year as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, the issue is, like, in New Mexico or Nevada, if you do have fires, there really isn't enough food for the animals as it is. I mean, they live on very little. And then to have, like, their whole, you know, food area scorched, the little bit that they had leaves them with nothing. And the other thing, too, that I didn't think about, a friend of mine does bighorn sheep. They renovate areas and fix where water is naturally coming up for the animals. And he was saying, you know, when you have these big fires, it also keeps them from being able to get water.
Yeah.
And it makes them
absolutely.
Really
it changes a lot of the environment. So I think we've definitely been seeing that in New Mexico this year. We fortunately haven't had any big fires up north. That's mostly in the south, in the southern part of New Mexico. But yeah, definitely impacts from last year's fires we're starting to see here. So.
So the other thing too. So how are you guys? I noticed on here it said goals. Events are a celebration. But anyway, it says the focus to be able to create clean, affordable, flavorful food while increasing self-reliance. Could you explain, like, what to you is that self-reliance is?
Absolutely. Since really 2008, we've seen the economy be reduced, I think, in the whole country, essentially. And so looking at having people do more things at their homes instead of going out and buying things. So instead of, for instance, going to buy frozen vegetables, you could actually grow your own, and then you could blanch them and freeze them, and then you have your own frozen vegetables. So doing more things at your home to be self-reliant and also to help you save money, I think, has been something that we've heard that we need to focus on. That's what people that come to our potlucks each month tell us. They give us feedback of what types of things that they would like to see. And so I think that's part of our statement that we do want to do more. And we call it community homesteading because we don't really feel like I don't feel like New Mexico has a lot of urban spaces. Especially up here in northern New Mexico. So that's why we're calling it community. And a lot of the things we do are things that you can do at your own home where you'll be able to reduce the cost that you're spending because you're not going to the store necessarily buying something. You're going through a process of planting seeds, growing something, and then storing that over the winter. So kind of back to my great-grandmother's, you know, back to what I saw her do when I was young. Is I
go
think
ahead.
What we've been
go
talking
ahead.
About.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, so that's kind of where our idea was, is we go back to what I saw when I was young with my great grandmother, and then I think the generations kind of changed, and a lot of people that are in their 30s right now don't really understand growing and doing things for themselves, but maybe with the economy. They've started to have those thoughts about, like, hey, why don't I grow my own tomatoes? Or whatever they like, they might want to start growing their own.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think just get involved in your neighborhood and trying to help other people. And There's always some kind of community garden, even if you don't really know what you're doing. You know, you could always help volunteer and get there. And just, I think sometimes all of a sudden you like put your hands in the soil and it all kind of comes to you, whether you know it or not. You kind of build a natural thing. Like the earth teaches you, I think, some ways, or helps to awaken, you know, some kind of genetic code in you, some memories about how to caretake it and how to grow food.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the first things I saw when I drove into New Mexico about 20 years ago. I saw the land and the dirt and the beauty, and then also thought, you know, how could I actually live here and function on a low budget, but being able to grow a lot of my own things. So, you know, I have two community garden spots this year, possibly because I can't grow squash. We have a lot of squash bugs that are in New Mexico. I don't know if you have those in Nevada, but we can't grow them in one of our gardens, so I joined a new garden to grow those, and I also have a huge garden spot in my yard. A lot of my yard is, I would say, I've tried to make it look good with vegetable gardening in nice, big, like, feed bins that are beautiful, like stainless steel looking bins, and then on the side of my house I have tomatoes and an herb garden in the back. So I've tried to do gardening at my house and also make it look beautiful.
Yeah, edible landscaping. Yay!
Exactly. So
so the other thing too is like reducing, and I'm asking these questions because, you know, people listen to these shows and some people might not understand like what self-reliance means or reducing our carbon footprint. And you say that underneath the goals on the website. So could you talk a little bit about how you guys reduced your carbon footprint and teach other people how to reduce their carbon footprints?
Oh, sure. Well, I think at each of our potlucks, we have some type of a speaker or a short class. And so we have certainly invited people that come that do all different types of reduction of their carbon footprint. Part of what we're doing in our tour next week, we have solar. Two of the people are completely on solar, and so we'll be having the companies that help them put the solar in there to talk about that as a way that people can invest in that ahead of time and then save money over time. So I think that's going to be a piece. And then I was also a part of, there's a class here called the Climate Masters. And that whole class basically teaches just average people how they can reduce their carbon footprint. And so all those little things that we learned in there, we're able to talk about or announce during our potlucks. And so far, our website has been educational. And so we'll be able to post things on our website each week that can help people learn that. So right now we just have it posted for our tour for another week, and then we'll start to post weekly articles on our website that will help people with just little things that are easy for them to do.
And so are there any like personal pet peeves or personal things that you do that you focus in on to reduce your personal carbon footprint? Because, you know, everybody has their little pet peeves about either it's power or it's recycling or it's composting. Do you have any like little carbon footprint pet peeves that you strictly kind of enforce in your own personal life?
Well, definitely we talked a little bit about composting and what we're doing with that. And I think that's an important one, that people don't put that into the landfill. And there is a whole lot more information about it as well. But that's an important thing. And just trying to get the city, we're hopefully trying to do this in the community gardens and then get the city to see what we're doing and have them start a program. Like they have wonderful composting programs in New York and in San Francisco. They just started one in Portland this year and in Seattle, and they're very big on not throwing things into the landfill that we don't need to throw in there. So definitely I think composting is my biggest one. And I eat a lot of vegetables, so I have a lot of scraps. And we don't actually compost at my own house because I have a German Shepherd dog and she likes to eat it. So we actually compost at the community garden. And that's something that I see as a place in different communities where we could do that, is a singular place. And community gardens are great because they can use the compost. And then I guess I try to ride my bike everywhere. I currently am not driving. I'm trying to figure out how to walk places or ride my bicycle to get places. And so sometimes that's a little hard because you have to think about what you have to take with you. And especially if I'm going to go and I'm gardening someplace, you have to figure out what you can fit in your backpack. but that's one of the other things that I'm trying to do is ride or walk places a little bit more. And that's the event that we're doing in the fall is going to be asking for a crosswalk or across one of the major streets here in town that's close to my house. And so hopefully we can actually bike across that and get to more places easily.
That's super good. No, you guys are doing a great job. So the other thing, too, is producing sustainability. Do you want to talk a little bit about sustainability and what Homegrown New Mexico views as sustainability and how you use that with your awareness and teaching and programs and even individually?
Sure. I think definitely a lot of the, I guess a lot of the teaching that we do is part of our potlucks because we always try to have people come and speak at our potlucks. And so that's definitely one that we need to have more speakers come to our potlucks and address. And fortunately, since I took the climate master's class this year, I have all those contacts in Santa Fe. But I really think just looking at your own life in your own home and what you can bring to it where you're not actually buying new things and throwing away things. I think that's another one of my one of my pet peeves is buying a lot of things that are packaged in plastic and throwing those away. So that's another whole aspect that we can teach people, you know, easy ways to cook. We do a lot of, 14 cooking classes this year, and that's been a big aspect of trying to get people to shop more in the bulk section and buy things that are in smaller packaging or no packaging, and then also to grow a lot of their own vegetables and just bring a bag everywhere that you go, I think is important as well. Because if you always have a bag with you, you're never going to run into the case where you have to get extra plastic bags. Because, you know, they eventually go into the trash, into the landfill. So I think that's a big one as well, to watch out for that, just in every aspect of what you're doing at your house and what you're bringing into your house and then what you're putting into the landfill, I think, is an important one as well. And we also have, we are trying to go trash-free at all of our potlucks. So we tell everybody to bring their own plate and cup and silverware. And, you know, some of our potlucks, we've had one plate that somebody had to use, and the guy was so apologetic. He's like, I rode my bike. I didn't bring a plate. I'm really sorry that I had to use your plate, and we have to compost it. So I think that's been an aspect that we've gotten people to, you know, focus on that, like bring your own plate and cup and silverware, and that's how we're going to do our potluck, and then they'll do that in other things. And people say, how do you get people to do that? And I said, well, you just tell them to bring it. And if you tell them enough times on the website and in emails, we also send a weekly email newsletter out that people actually start to do that, what they're asked to do. So it's been pretty amazing. We haven't taken the trash out in several of our potlucks.
Yay, that's such a good thing. That's such a great thing. So, in closing here, we have like maybe 5 minutes or so. What do you think, like, you know, personally in your life, what do you think are some of like the most important things that you see, you know, coming down the pipeline in the future from, because sometimes when, you know, we go to school and we get involved in the whole ecology and the farming and all this other stuff, we know so much stuff that the average person doesn't know. And we start to understand and start to formulate, you know, like our opinions of it. Is there anything that keeps you awake at night? Is there anything that you want to discuss about like what the future is that you think are really, really important to discuss or to lend a little bit of knowledge to that can get people thinking about?
Well, definitely, I think all of the things that we use and then put into the landfill, I think, is one of the things that I think about. And, you know, you can go back and forth. I did a whole year where I made all my own products. And, you know, my family was just, they couldn't understand what we were doing, why we were doing all of this. And so taking a look at, you know, going full scale and doing that where you're not buying any packaging materials, back to buying certain things and being really careful about it, I think, is important. So I think that's what I think about is the amount of trash that we're making as Americans and how we can reduce that, because that's something that's easy that people can reduce. As they're going to the store, they can start thinking, you know, hey, I don't need to buy spices in a jar. I can actually buy them in the bulk section and reuse that bag the next time I go. Or, you know, I can do that with fruits and vegetables. Why put them in a bag? I can just buy them. Lots of people have touched them already, so I don't really need to protect them from anything. I'll just wash them before I eat them. And really just looking at what you're purchasing at the grocery store, I think, is the simplest thing for people to think about. And then also what you're purchasing and what how they package it for you, because a lot of people try to give you bags everywhere that you go. And I think that's one that I lived in Seattle, I think about 5 years ago. And in Seattle, they always ask you, where's your bag? You know, did you bring a bag? And here, when I moved to New Mexico, that wasn't the case. They just try to stuff as many things into plastic bags as possible. And so I've been, you know, trying to bring a bag and show it to people and just say, hey, I have this. You know, we can just put it in here. And I think that's one of the easiest things that people can do, is really just taking a look at what they're buying that will be put into the landfill, that won't be able to be recycled as well, and then how they're packaging different things. Because, I mean, the bags, ultimately I'll take them home and I'll reuse them, but they mostly go into the landfill eventually. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I think about. And then also, if you grow your own food, you're thinking about, it doesn't have to be the most beautiful apple. There might be a wormhole in it, but it's okay because it's a tasty apple. And so I think getting people's attitudes about what they're buying for their fruits and vegetables is also one of the things. I know working with the CSA, we get a share of food every week, and we don't get to pick what that share is. It's, you know, whatever's ripe and whatever is ready to be distributed. So sometimes we don't get the best looking food, but it's all delicious food, and we just look at it in that way instead of trying to get, you know, the perfect looking food at the grocery store. So I think those really, trash is the thing I think about the most, which doesn't sound very good, but I think that's something that's important that people can change.
Yeah, exactly. So is there anything else that you would like to talk about? I've just really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm just really excited about your guys' future, you know, and all the amazing work that you guys are putting forth and will continue to put forth. But is there anything else that you would like to discuss or talk about or anything else before I send you back to your farming work?
Well, definitely, I think community gardens are really important, and that's what we're hoping that we can build more of here. And I hope that everybody in the country is looking at building more community gardens, because I know in highly populated areas, when I first moved to Seattle, I only lived there for about 3 years, loved the city, but it rained every day. So that didn't go with my Colorado, New Mexico, bright sunshine days. And so there, you know, when I moved into my condo, I lived on Queen Anne Hill, and I was getting ready to move in, and everybody said, oh, what community garden are you going to be joining? And I was like, I didn't even know there were community gardens. What do you mean? And there were a couple community gardens that were close to the condo, and they wanted to know which waiting list I'd been on before I moved in the condo. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting question, because I don't actually know how I'm going to grow food, you know, other than herbs in the condo. And so I think in highly populated areas, that's really important for people to have a space where they can go. I think gardening's really relaxing as well. and there's a lot of health of eating food that you know that you haven't put any chemicals on. So I think that's really important, and we're hoping that we can build more in New Mexico and then also do more tours. We're doing a community garden tour in the middle of September, and so we'll be able to show people that we have community gardens. A lot of people in town don't even know that we have 10 community gardens here. So just really getting the word out, I think, has been important to us, and I think that's important in almost any city to whatever you have, you need to market that and get the word out so that people know. And then also make sure the city knows that you have that many. Because even though the city has worked with us on those here, I don't know that when I go to the meeting this week that they will know how many. I'm going to ask them when I come in, how many community gardens do you think we have? And see what they say.
So, I love that.
Yeah, because I like asking questions. And so that's what we've been asking at all of the summer. And, you know, some of the kids don't even know what a community garden is. So I think that's probably really important that we can have those spaces for highly populated areas that might not have space for a yard at their actual home, but they can have space somewhere in town where they can go and relax and garden, and you get to talk to other people, and everybody always knows something in a community garden. It might not be the right thing, but everybody has an opinion.
Well, that's, I mean, it's better than watching TV, right? Because at least it gets you thinking. You know, no matter if it irritates you or not, it opens something up in you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we definitely, you know, and that's a lot of the volunteers that I get are people that are part of the community garden, because I feel like they want to be out there and growing something, or even like failing at growing something, you know, like they just want to be out there talking to people and be available. And so I think that's been really important to me and a lot of the people that I've met here. And I wasn't on a waiting list in Seattle, so I never got into a community garden there. But I know they have several of them, and they're huge in the Northwest to have different community gardens. So I think that's really important. I think here the director of the Parks Division actually went to Seattle to look at community gardens before they put them in here to make sure he had the right vision and kind of area for how the community garden should work.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right there? Okay.
Yep, yeah, no, I'm still here. So, no, that's definitely, and a lot of people say they have a community garden, and I think they have more of what's called a neighborhood garden, because they're not giving people the actual chance to lease that space.
Yeah.
And so here we're just charging people for water, because water is really important, because we don't have as much rain. It looked like it was going to rain when I got on the phone with you, but I don't know that it actually is going to rain today.
It's called a cloud drive-by. We get them here all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The cloud, I like that, the cloud drive-by. So, you know, it looks like we have some rain clouds, but it doesn't necessarily rain. So we just charge people for water.
30 seconds left.
So anyway, I'm going to let you go and close the show real quick. Thanks so much for being on my show, and we hope you do really well.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. This is the Bridget Lindahl Goff, the host of the Urban Farm Project. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.